Now, are you taking it? It sounds like you're rushing to get this movie done, so you must be absolutely crazy.
I am. I'm crazy. I'm actually, things are calming down. You know, the final visual effects, we had about 9 outstanding shots, as you saw, it wasn't finished, that were finished on Friday. And now we have to affect those shots because some of them dissolve, you know, color time them, do all the finishing touches, and throw them into the movie for a May 8th release. And that's a bit nerve-wracking because the ones that are down to the wire, you know, are the hardest ones. And, you know, you spend as much detail with an actor, you know, getting a moment out of an actor, as you do in shaping these visual effect shots, creating the look of the wave and giving the comet a character.
Which scenes are going to change for us? Is there a lot of things committing to a numerator?
Well, nothing's going to change in terms of the cutting. It'll just
the effects.
They'll just be better.
Yep.
They just won't. You know, some of them seem. Some of them were a bit cartoonish. Those will not be cartoonish, we hope.
But all the shots that we saw will be the shots.
That's correct. They'll just be improved. New and improved.
Why do you think two movies like this, or why does this contribute to serving the world movies this year?
I think it's the millennium. I think it's the sign of the times. I think people are wondering, you know, what's the world going to be like? Are we going to be here? You know, I think people are fascinated with, you know, if the world ended, you know, what's my life going to be like if there was a comet? You know, I think people, at least my goal in making this movie was focusing on if the world were to end, you know, what would I do? How would I live my life differently? You know, what would I do if I knew I was going to die tomorrow? You know, I mean, I think it's fascinating.
What was your response a few months ago when news came out that there's an asteroid that might hit the Earth in about 30 years?
Well, it was really spooky. You know, I thought, life imitating art imitating life. I said, please don't let it hit before my movie opens. No.
What scared me was reading this book called Impact, that there was one in 1989 where they didn't realize that it was, they said, 6 hours away until it might pass.
Yes.
That's really scary.
You know, it's really scary. So then you say, well, there really should be more funding for these comet watchers so that they can monitor these comets. I mean, we know about 250 of them, but it would be nice to know more. I mean, I want to know more. Not that you can do much about it.
How much in the script in terms of what is done in that year when they talk about the ship and the planet? I mean, is that all science fiction in terms of building the ship and the nuclear weapons and all that stuff?
Well,
they do to combat the comet.
You know, I got together a huge think tank of NASA scientists, Jerry Griffin, comet specialists, astrophysicists, and, you know, I sat down with them and said, okay, if this were to happen, how would we get up there? Jerry Griffin came up with the idea of a nuclear propulsion system because they were actually working on one in the 60s. And then, of course, the word nuclear is a no-no, and that went away. But I think, you know, I tried to stay as scientifically accurate as we could, and this is how we came up with our scenario of planning the nukes. Because I think that is what they would do. No one's ever landed on a comet. But maybe in 5-10 years, we will be able to. And that was our vision, you know, of what it would look like.
Was any of the science watered down for the mass audience?
I think, you know, when you're making a film, you get as much science. I mean, if you try to make your movie science-backed and as realistic as possible, you try and do it as accurately as you possibly can, and then you know, creatively, that the creative side takes over. For example, you work with these scientists, and they say, "Well, a comet has dark gases coming off of it," you know, and you go, "Okay, you know, how do they know that? You know, no one's ever been up close to a comet." Okay. Okay, that's dark gases. Okay, then you start doing your renderings of what does a comet look like with your ILM, the Industrial Light and Magic artists, visual effects artists. And then the black smoke looks terrible. So then you use white smoke, or you use blue smoke, or gases, you know. Then you're making a movie, and you trying to make what looks right. Like, if the scientifically or mathematically, they say, okay, the tidal wave is a mile high, and it's going this fast. And then you look at it, the rendering on an animatic is what it's called, you go, oh, that's not fast enough. It looks slow. It doesn't look right. So you do it as fast as you think it should be. You try, okay, let's try that 30% faster. Okay, it's not scientifically accurate, but it looks good. It's a movie.
Tell us about the guy who was reading his newspaper.
Well, you know, actually, that's Stewart. That's the, see, the movie was a little long. Well, you know, he's in denial. That I actually had more shots of Stewart walking through the streets of New York. I was going, ah! And Stewart, our news editor, Bruce Weiss, I had him walking through the streets and then getting a newspaper and sitting there and smoking his last cigarette. And I sort of cut all that part out and just had him sitting there. And so you don't know who it is. Like, who is that guy?
He doesn't know where he is or what's happening either.
Oh, he does. He's in denial.
Okay.
He's in denial. And I think a lot of people would be. I mean, I think some people would be. They just say,
why go crazy?
Why go crazy? I'm going to have my last smoke, and I'm going to read the newspaper. I should have done more shots, because all of you are saying, what about that guy? And you know what I was going to? You've got to follow your instinct.
How much is involved here in terms of you having get this movie out before the other movie? Was this set originally to be early summer, or was it moved around to be another movie?
Well, I was in prep when I heard Armageddon was coming down the pike, and, you know, we just accelerated a bit so that we could, you know, of course, stay ahead, because you don't want to come out second. It's horrible to be in a race. You're making a movie, and you're not making a movie so you can be in a race. You're making a movie because you believe in the story and you really like it. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're in a race. You don't want to be. But I never read the script and didn't make any adjustments because of their scripts. People would come and say things to you like, I don't know what they would say. Hey, well, they land on a comet too, and hey, they're using nukes. Well, very good. Glad they're using nukes. So are we, you know. I'm not changing my story.
We hear about these big movies, how the budget goes out of control. How do you manage to keep on budgeting that process? Did you keep on budgeting?
Pretty much. I mean, this movie is much lower than you think it is.
I heard 65 or 70.
Yeah, it's in there. And it's, you know, it's... around there. It's hard with these big movies. But you know, I think my television training of course helps with that. But these movies are hard to do because of the visual effects are very costly.
And we also heard that you shot a lot more than you needed. You had to tear it down at some point.
Well, like I said, Bruce walking through the streets of New York, you know, you make a movie and then you look at it and you go, it's too long. I've got to get down to the, it's sort of like when you get into the third act of a movie, you've got to start cutting it like it's a third act of a movie. And also, I think when Armageddon came in, you know, we started to accelerate our prep, which means we were still doing some rewrites while we were prepping. And that's always problematic. And you always shoot more than you should. And in television, you really don't do that. You can't afford to. And in features, that happens quite often. And it really, you know, every single time it happens, that I shouldn't be doing this. You know, that happened a little here.
But the relationship between the character, Cameron, and
oh yeah.
Shot and then
a little bit. Yes, I mean they never made love, but there was an introduction scene. There was a scene about them talking about the end of the world. And then it seems superfluous, you know, when I start cutting the movie. It's slowing down the movie. It's not what the movie's about. It's about her relationship with her parents. It's about her going back to the womb. You know, it's about her making amends with her father. It's about her becoming a woman. It's really not about her love affair with this cameraman. You know?
Didn't Vanessa have a death scene?
No. Yeah. That was it.
Because we left thinking, oh,
that it was
the red grave is cheese for the death scene.
No. Well, you know, it was sort of like, do I put the pills on the table? Or will people get it? You know, will they get it? Because I really didn't want to shoot her taking pills and a funeral. You know, it was a choice.
It seemed to me that a lot of the imagery with the buses and the soldiers was almost reverse Holocaust imagery.
Exactly.
And was that intentional?
Very much so.
Because you've got the people trying to get on the buses.
It was exactly what I told the crowd. Those very words. I said, this is the opposite you're trying to say.
And the wedding, is that also?
That wasn't even in the script, but what was the question?
The wedding between two kids.
Mm-hmm.
During the Holocaust, a lot of young children got married
mm-hmm.
to local camps.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they were getting married to get her in.
That's right.
Caves. Was that also special. Holocaust?
Well, for me it was. Very much so. I mean, it wasn't written as a love-death montage. I mean, a marriage-death montage. And I really wanted to do that with the president, with the weight of the world, you know, intercut with that.
I was thinking, too, this is a very unusual action movie. That scene between Robert Duvall and the astronaut is not like something you would see in some blockbusters.
Right.
And it must have been tricky for you to balance what people go in expecting a summer action movie, and this is much more character-oriented
than
what we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think movies have to change. I think we've seen so many of these action films, and they're all the same movie over and over again. They're very generic of each other. I didn't want to go and just make a disaster movie with visual effects. I wanted to make a story about people. And I hope movies are changing. I hope they're taking a new direction. I hope there's more thought going into these movies. But personally, I have no, and I'm probably the only person who has no desire to see Godzilla. Okay. I mean, I have no desire. I saw the trailer. I've seen it. I personally love the Japanese films. You know, a lot of Sink, and I mean, that's what's funny. And you know, I have no desire to see it because I know what it's going to be.
Yeah. Robert Duvall didn't want to wear a cowboy hat going into the comic.
No. He was great. God. All the young actors, you know, would look at him, you know, the elder statesman, and, you know, you could just see when they first met him their feelings of their love for their profession and their love for him. It was interesting.
Was it difficult for your first two films taking on two genres that are generally dominated by men in front of the camera and behind the camera?
Well, they're difficult movies. I don't think they're more difficult because I'm a female. Is that what you mean?
Well, is there more pressure, I guess? I mean, is there someone waiting for you to fail?
I think there's always someone waiting for you to fail. Hopefully it's not the people you're working with. But it's always a pressure. You know, making a movie without any visual effects and any action is so hard. You know, making a television show in 8 days, you know, you get a script in 7, you shoot it in 8, you cut it in 4, and a couple of days close, it's on the air. There's nothing easy about it. But it's exciting. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Was it difficult balancing several plot lines that have characters who never interact with each other?
Yes, it was very difficult, because I shot them in 3 separate movies. And you know, I planned my transitions, hoping there would be connective tissue, hoping that you would feel they had all met each other, because it's only Taya and Morgan who actually meet each other. You know, and I was just hoping that we would feel that. I think you feel that. You feel like they've connected. It was hard. But it was like sort of doing a television show. You know how you do, you know, like an ER has like 5 or 6 storylines going on at once, and sometimes they relate emotionally, but they don't relate really at all in a literal fashion. You know, so I'm sort of used to doing that, coming from episodic television. But on a bigger scale with a movie, it's just bigger, harder.
So you saved Western Canada.
Yeah. Are you Canadian?
Yes.
I did it for you. Oh,
I'm Western.
Oh, okay.
Well, because everything is concentrated in North America.
Everything is what?
It's concentrated at the land. Both comments.
Why did I have them here?
Yes.
Oh, I thought New York needed a little cleaning up. Our characters were here, you know, in Virginia on the eastern seaboard, and I thought that the comet should hit where our characters are, because then
what's the use?
What's the use? You know, it's far more effective that way. That was the reasoning.
How have you done these two films? Having fear of being typed as a quote action director, and you won't be able to do the smaller personal film you might want to do?
Well, I really don't have a lot of fear because of where I've come from and the type of work that I've done. I mean, people will label me and have labeled me action woman, you know, but I don't see myself that way. I come from drama. I've always directed drama. That's my love. And I think that's very apparent in this movie. So I hope I'm not, you know, labeled. But you know, you can't help with being labeled. I just go home and be a mom and try to be myself.
Yeah, I have primary kids.
I have one daughter, 11.
Do you have your next project?
Well, one of my next projects will be Sentimental Journey, which is the story of my parents based on their life. And,
but you don't have a definite.
No, I'm going to take a vacation. I need to stop working for a while.
How long was this? What kind of budget do you need for that?
For Sentimental Journey?
Yeah.
I need about $20 million. $20-$25 million. Do you have 20 plus?
I know a guy that you worked for.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, it's based on their lives. My mother survived Auschwitz. My father was a soldier, General Patton's Army. And it's an epic love story, actually. It has no action. It has no action per se, and it has no effect. Visual effect.
No actors. Is there a script?
It's a script. My father wrote it 20 years ago. We tried. It was a low budget. You know, feature film director. There's 23 features. And he died a month before I started Peacemaker. And my brother's a writer, Ruben, and he rewrote it. And we're going to make it. But I don't know if we're going to make it next. All the elements are coming into shape, and it's out to talent, it's out to financiers. And I'm going to make it.
But the other actors that are lined up might do it there, or you're not showing it to
them. No, I'm showing it to actors as we speak. But I can't speak about that because
you don't know.
I don't know which one's going to see yet. But I don't know. You know, I'm looking for something very unique, something that hasn't been done, something, you know, besides Sentimental Journey, I'm looking for good material.
Last question.
Are you saying no to any more action at this point?
Yes. I'm saying no. I need a break. I don't want to be labeled.
Sure. Interesting. Directors get stereotypes like that.
Everything's fine.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yes, I managed to play the play, so I do something.